We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, September 23rd, All Victory Weekend wrap-up edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Kicking off on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2.5 hours, we'll call it a victory lap show. From inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, I'm going to leap right into LSU and the Saints. But know this, Cajun fans, the win at Ohio, the way that it happened, final score wasn't indicative of how much one-way traffic that was for the Vermilion and White up in Athens, Ohio. You are going to have your time on this program. Three very impressive victories for different reasons, but three imperfect teams as well. And as we begin, I'm talking LSU, I'm talking Saints. Jump in as you'd like, but hurry today. You will get left behind if you wait to call in later in the program. 706-0111. And I'll tell you something that wasn't lost on me this weekend. We're in a new era. The Saints won a game yesterday like so many Les Miles teams did at the beginning of this decade. Think dominant defense, opportunistic defense that causes turnovers. Think special teams points. It was a game where the offense, I know I was almost laughed off my own show Friday for suggesting, will they reach 300 yards? 265 total yards was the total yesterday. Now, there were reasons for that, kind of like the special teams, taking an opportunity away by scoring a touchdown. Kind of like the defense, taking an opportunity away by scoring a touchdown. But the Saints won it like LSU kind of had to a lot of times back in the day. And, in a strange irony, LSU taking on an outmatched Vandy team, especially the Commodore defense, LSU won a game like so many have had to during the Peyton Breeze era between the Super Bowl during the 2009 campaign, and let's just say maybe 2 years ago. Basically, the arrival of Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, and everything since. That interim period, bookended by those two kind of teams or eras, it had to be Breeze outscoring people, throwing, just fun and gun style. And that's what Joe Burrow and LSU look like. Now, I'll tell you, again, what's interesting to me, the mark of a good team is that they can adapt and win no matter what, especially on the road. And so I take away far more positives than negatives from what the Saints did in Seattle yesterday. I didn't see that coming, not even close. The defense was tremendous. The special teams for New Orleans, minus the punt return fumble and the Will Lutz field goal that ended up just short of the crossbar, minus those two plays, special teams was excellent for the Saints yesterday. And so it was truly a holistic effort, making up for the lack of number nine. And oh, by the way, as much as the offense looked at times out of sorts, Alvin Kamara is a freaking stud. And there are no two ways around that. I don't know that he could be your every down, every back guy, but they're trying to make him that right now. And the way that he just slips in and out of tackles, spin moves, running through it, he's incredible. And so Kamara yesterday, I thought, was darn near Herculean. And so everybody did their part with the lack of Breeze around. They jumped on Seattle early, and they got a huge win for this year's New Orleans Saints football team. We told you if they found a way to split at Seattle versus Dallas, well, and it's back on like Donkey Kong. Now they've done that, and they're playing with house money this Sunday night back in the Dome. But yeah, they had to win it a different way. And yeah, it's a continued glimpse into what life without Drew Brees is going to be like in a season or three. But those are future Saints fans' problems. What you know right now, if you're part of Houdat Nation, your team is 2-1. You just showed defensively that you could put one of the better offenses in the league, at least in terms of dual-threat quarterbacks, in relative shackles. I understand over 300 yards passing for Russell Wilson. I know he ran one in, and I know with that late, gratuitous, garbage-time touchdown that they scored a good bit of points, the Seattle Seahawks. But the reality is this. They were absolutely spellbound on third and fourth downs. Had no chance against the Saints' defense. And that's considering that Russell Wilson is almost like a cheat code when it comes to sacking the guy. He does not go down in the pocket. But the rest of the Saints, especially that secondary, I think played their best game of this young season. So the Saints won it like LSU kind of used to have to back in the gap. The other side, LSU with an offensive performance for the ages. And they're continuing to look more maybe old school Saints of, you know, as in like 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe that's not even due justice. Maybe we should just tell it like it is. We thought that they played like a Big 12 team because they were playing Texas a couple weeks ago in a Big 12 stadium, Big 12 environment. Apparently the area of the country where they will put your band up in the top of the section of seating. Maybe the truth is LSU is kind of turned in to a bit of a Big 12 team. I am nowhere near pressing the complete and utter panic button. Not telling you I'm giving up, pulling the parachute cord on LSU's defense, because sure, some of it is injuries. But I think I've come around to the fact that most of it isn't. You could say pace of play, and I'd say maybe that's 5 to 10% of the pie chart. If we were dissecting why LSU's defense kind of looks like Oklahoma's a little bit. I think the majority of it is this team hasn't played together yet. I think they have some players that are veteran that are either injured or maybe not quite living up to billing. Let's call a spade. But what we do know is this. LSU offensively is playing keep away. Here's how many points we can score. Can you catch us? And I don't think many in the SEC will be able to. That being said, it almost feels inevitable that when you come up against Florida, Auburn, Alabama, and maybe, just maybe, Texas A&M, I think there's at least one of those games where you don't get on quite the offensive roll that you've become accustomed to, where Joe Burrow doesn't quite put up Heisman Trophy-level numbers. And then suddenly that defense, which hasn't been up to its usual tricks, is going to have to win a game for you. Where, in all honesty, LSU's defense hasn't been asked to do that so far this season. And so it's about getting guys healthy, it's about the continuity, and it's about what happens when Burrow has a game, let's say, for example, like Zach Mettenberger had in Oxford in 2013, when it's just not going right. And even though you've got studs all around you, you just don't have your best stuff. Can the defense go out and win it for you? I think we're going to have to find out the answer to that question sooner than later. But we know that LSU continues to live up to the billing of arguably the best offense we've ever seen in the purple and gold. In fact, I'm not even sure that you should argue that anymore. It just is so far. Burrow is a bona fide Heisman candidate. And as I told you before this season, Ja'Marr Chase is the best receiver on LSU's team. Now, Clint is smiling on the other side of the divide because he knows that in my book it predictions, I also told you that Travis Etienne would win the Heisman. I told you that Oregon would beat Auburn. Sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss. I had little doubt, though, about Ja'Marr Chase, and that is saying nothing negative against Justin Jefferson and some of the others that are out there running around catching balls. But what we saw Ja'Marr Chase do against Vanderbilt, he's remarkable, Clint. The guy's going to be a first-round pick, I think, if he stays healthy after next season. There are still people that are seeing ghosts of Ja'Marr Chase catching footballs in Austin, Texas right now. He's unbelievable. And the continuity between him and Burrow, if the defense had half that, we wouldn't be having some of this glass-half-empty conversation about Dave Aranda and the defensive side.
Exactly. What he's been able to do as of late, I mean, you just look at this past Saturday, two big runs, I believe, of over 50 yards, four touchdowns. He was getting a lot of it done, the run after catch, which was absolutely huge. Definitely an understated part of the game because everybody obviously talked about Joe Burrow and his six touchdowns.
Is the defense just struggling because the offense is putting pressure on them? I'm going to tell you no. I think that's way too easy of an out. On the other side of this break, I'll let you air out your thoughts on the subject. Let's get active early on a Monday. Big show today. Coming up at 4:30 in about 18 minutes, Gus Kattengill. He's got his fingers on the pulse of the Big Easy. Is it a sports hangover in New Orleans? We'll ask him at half past this hour. Ruffin Rodrigue in almost exactly an hour, talking LSU and the Cajuns. He texted me before the game. He's like, Ben, I need a war chant. What do the people say leading into a UL game these days? He said, I know what it used to be when my Uncle G.A. was out there. What is it now? And I said, it's real simple, brother. Along. And so, yeah, we're going to bring him back, and we're going to roll with Ruffin Rodrigue at 5:15. And at straight up 6 o'clock, James Buers dissecting LCA versus Acadiana and a couple teams that have fallen in holes early. St. Martinville and Catholic New Iberia, will they bounce back? James Buers with us at straight up 6 o'clock. And then we send you to the nation's capital at 6:30 for the pregame show. Kickoff just after 7, Redskins, Bears, Monday Night Football. Big Monday show. Stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, I think we'll have a gridiron debate touching down, oh, right about now. Ben and Clint right back at it on a Monday, and we're ready for you. So call us up. Let's have a little fun before Gus Kattengill joins the program. That's when the fun stops here in about 15 or 16 minutes. But in the meantime, we're talking LSU football. Huge win over Vandy in terms of the final score, in terms of how many points, yards LSU racked up. Curious how healthy you think it is. 706-0111. CD, let me officially get the question out of the way. First, the music.
Exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day. Are you more amazed by LSU's offense or dismayed by the defense? And understand the choice of words there, because it was intentional. I didn't say depressed by the defense. I didn't say alarmed by the defense. Are you dismayed by the defense more so than you are amazed, captivated by Joe Burrow and the offense? Call us up. Let us know. 706-0111. Clint, I'm feeling selfish on a Monday. That means I'll lead us out of the tunnel here. It's close, but I'm going to tell you that I'm more amazed than impressed by LSU's offense. Partly because, well, we've never seen it before. At least in Baton Rouge, right? We've seen it with the Saints. The Cajuns have had their own version of it. Depending on the flavor of high school football that you prefer, you've seen it before. So it's not like they're doing things we've never seen. But the level of productivity and efficiency certainly is unmatched in the history of this program. More so than the Met Show with his two, you know, future Cleveland Browns and Jeremy Hill. This is more prolific than that. It's actually not even terribly close. Now, it's also a little more one-sided than that. Jeremy Hill in that rushing attack, even though I know Clyde Edwards-Helaire went over 100 in Music City, this rushing attack wasn't what that group had. It's just not. But this passing game is special. And I know Terrace Marshall went out with an injury. I understand that little nick as well for Justin Jefferson. But I think those guys will be fine. They'll be back. This is an incredible passing attack. It's led by a quarterback that's playing as good as any we've seen wear these colors in a while, maybe ever, at least for a four-game window. So I'm more amazed by LSU's offense, but I acknowledge the fact that this defense has the capability of getting LSU in trouble down the stretch of this season. Not rooting for it, nor predicting it. But I think at some point, you might not be able to run away and hide with the amount of points that you score against some of the SEC teams. Style of play, level of athlete, that's just my take. Let's go get yours. Out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ron, you're up first. Which is it for you?
I'm going to go with amazed at the offense. Because of our passing game. But a quick comment, though. Zach Mettenberger, year when we had Landry and Odell, both reached 1,000 yards receiving and Hill. Our defense let us down in, like, two games that year, I think. The Georgia game, I think, was Alabama game. And so we kind of seen this before. So, but I have to go with the offense. That's just a comment on the Zach Mettenberger years. We had a young defense that year, and they were kind of up and down, if you remember.
That's right. That's right. And even one of the games where they played well, I keep mentioning the game at Oxford, that was one of Mettenberger's lone boo-boos. That's a good call from Ron. Let's take another. Back out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Chad, you're up.
Ben, way more amazed on the offense, my man. Never expected this so early. The defense is going to come around. We had too many great players. I think this is more schematic, man, trying different things. I think when we get in the SEC play, and they're doing more combinations now. Ben, also, you need to put me on spread heads, my man. Only 5 for 5. Michigan is garbage. I bet at the house I could take you and your wife to Roost Chris. Later.
My man. We're kicking Dino out. We're subbing Chad in. I like that. We might have to expand spread heads and just bring in, you know, fellow brothers of the spread. I love it. Chad, big ups. Take your wife out before you take me and my wife out. But then maybe we'll all go out if you keep winning. Back again to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Bo, thank you for waiting. More impressed by the offense, or are you more dismayed by the defense?
It's definitely more impressed by the offense, the confidence that they have, and how they feel they could score on every play. But I believe in the flow of the game, and you look at what happened in the Super Bowl where you have two high-powered offenses, and you just sometimes you get stuck in these defensive games. And then you look at the Big 12 when they get in these high-scoring games where the defense just back on the field. I think we got people playing out of place. I'd like to see our team all healthy and together, and I think our defense can get back to somewhat what it was.
It's a good call, and it gave me a good jumping-off point. Bo, thanks for the ring.
Yeah.
Hey, before we take another, okay, I think he meant that to spin it forward and positive, right? Guys are out of place. When people are healthy, they'll be right. And maybe that's the case. Everybody that supports the purple and gold hopes that's the case. But what he said there is kind of my point. Eventually, you play a game that gets in tight quarters. It happens to everyone. The 2007 Patriots were setting freaking records. They didn't lose a game with Randy Moss. Didn't lose a game. Those old geezers in Miami couldn't uncork the champagne for 18 freaking games. And then they met Michael Strahan and the Giants. And they played a game where everybody scored 20 or less. I just think it's inevitable. So what I'm telling you is LSU is not doomed in one of those scenarios, but they've got a lot of room to improve before they can win one of those games played in tight quarters. All right, back out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Chris, what you got for us?
Hey, man, I'm definitely swimming with the offense on this one. But I do think that you are drastically missing the point with the defense as far as the LSU's offense effect on them. Because if you look at the time of possession last year, I think LSU was like 19th in the country with time of possession. This year they're 89th or 90th. So they're playing almost a whole quarter extra time of possession on the field as compared to last year. To me, that's way more than a 5% effect on that defense.
That could be fair. All right, so let's continue this conversation because that's a great point. I guess I would ask you this, Chris. They're playing maybe a quarter more, and they're playing without key guys that are injured, and that all has to be taken into account. But under any of the last 5 or 6 years of LSU's defense, do you think it's acceptable to allow Vandy to do what they did on offense, even if it's more exposure on the field?
Oh, no, I don't think that that's acceptable. But I think it's an adjustment that they're going to have to make in conditioning and getting people healthy, and I really think they're going to come around.
That's fair. And it may darn well be more than 5%. Chris, thanks for the call.
All right, man.
It's a good stat. When you're out there a lot and you're doing it with less bodies, which means rookies are having to play more, changes the game. All right, we can take at least one, maybe two. We'll get back out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Dusty, give us your take.
Brother Love, listen, all of us LSU fans got to get down on our hands and knees that our offense is the way it is right now. Our defense, that's going to come back up to par. Coach Dave Aranda is not making that $10 million contract for nothing. Once our injuries heal up, we will get back on track. But we got to be all impressed and thank God for our offense right now.
No question. They're winning the day. Thank you, Dusty. He ain't wrong. The offense is rolling. They're carrying the team. Is it going to become more of an even split? I think that's part of what we're getting at here. Good commentary so far. Let's take another. Back out. Before we finish the segment, to the Artco Equipment Hotline, Mike, you got the final word of this this run. What you got for us?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, my brother? I just got to say, anytime you score 66 points, hey, that says it all right there. That's going to keep the interest in the game. My whole thing about this is that defense keep it interesting, offense keep it fun. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I like that. The offense has been keeping it more than just fun for LSU so far. Good conversation on a Monday. And how could you not be a little chipper today, right? If you don't have the pep in your step, I can't help you. LSU goes on the road and scores 66. Questions, sure, but they're leaving no questions behind on offense. Saints get a win that, I got to tell you, I never saw it turning out that way. So many different people and units stepped up on the road. Your boy Pete Carroll took one off the schnoz in the pregame. Pretty interesting things happened on the West Coast. We'll discuss them on the other side with Gus Kattengill. And at the bottom of this hour, we can keep it going. LSU offense versus defense. But I do want to acknowledge a huge win for Billy Napier and the Raging Cajuns. I won't call it a statement win, but they're getting awfully closer to being able to make one of those statements. Don't think that App State game isn't in mind for me. I know UL's thinking about Georgia Southern, but your boy's thinking about App State on a Wednesday night. We'll be right back at it. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
Week 11, and he could come back for the final six games of the season. Carolina Panthers say Cam Newton will not be playing next week.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
The Saints in Seattle without Breeze, jumping out to a 20-point lead, holding on for a victory. That's the way that we all had it, right? Yeah, maybe not. But boy, was it awesome. Time to rehash the whole thing. Let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. It's our Monday Steady. Gus Kattengill, ESPN 100.3 in the Big Easy, host of the Sports Hangover. And I imagine there might be a hangover for a good reason right now in your city, Gus.
It's amazing what a week will do, right? A week ago, let's be honest, a lot of people probably were a little down and out, a little doom and gloom. And rightfully so, and understandably so. Nothing that Teddy had done, it made you say, great, your Hall of Fame quarterback was injured, and you know, let's be honest, we spent a lot of months, weeks, and days talking about his Super Bowl run. So I think it was incredible to see the team sort of gather itself and also just go out there and put out an amazing team win, which is kind of what I think we saw. And, you know, today, at least on our show, that's what it was. It was nonstop calls of people just talking about special teams, the punter, Thomas Morris, the defensive plays, offensive plays. I think a lot of people feel a little differently this week than last week.
What do you think it took from Sean Payton, this staff, look, team leaders, I mean, talking about players that are on this squad, what did it take during that week to get to the point where it was understood it's really going to take everybody? Nine's not walking through that door. How did they cultivate that mentality?
I think it starts with Drew, right? I mean, he's the guy that will see leadership. You've seen really in the last couple of years – guys like Cam Jordan kind of come on and establish himself as almost the second face of this team. So I think whether it was on purpose, whether other guys understand, look, Drew's not going to be here forever, you've seen some guys sort of step up. That said, I think it goes back to also what Sean Payton said, right? It's bringing in the right guys into the locker room. And I think you saw it yesterday, you know, Kamara talking about confidence. And earlier in the week he was asked, you guys still – think y'all are a Super Bowl team, and he said, do I have a Florida Lee on the side of my helmet? I mean, that's, man, if that didn't get you, you know, your juices flowing in that locker room, that's awesome. Because the only way he's saying is, yeah, it's fine, but this whole team is a Super Bowl contending team. And you have DeMario Davis, you know, taking the lead and saying, look, I want to do the pregame chant and asking Drew if that's okay with him. And so the fact that you have players that want to be in a leadership role, that want to say, hey, guys, you know, you can follow me through the hole and, you know, through the line, and I'll get you there. And then it's multiple people that can do that. I think that speaks volumes, man. And, you know, it starts with Sean giving the ability to let players believe and think that, hey, you're capable of doing it. But also I think a locker room that's been cultivated to say, hey, look, if, you know, it's there for the taking. And that's difficult to do, man, because you've seen a team in a franchise that's been led by one guy. I'm not saying you haven't had a lot of other players that help, but it was always unquestionably Drew Brees' team. I think yesterday, though, we saw some guys ready to take the lead if needed, and the day when it comes to do it after Drew leaves.
Gus, your reaction to the offensive performance and understanding they had two possessions taken away from them because the defense and special teams scored, understanding that there wasn't maybe as much Taysom Hill at quarterback as many anticipated. I guess factor all that in. Tell me what you saw and what you think of it.
I think if we see more of what we saw in the last drive of the first half, in the opening drive of the second half, I think got a shot to win every game. And that's where Teddy won, what, 10 of 13, 111 yards, two touchdowns. You felt flow, you felt comfort, you felt tempo, and he was delivering the football on strike, on point, nice slants to Dave, to Thomas, out ahead to Kamara, making the right reads, making right decisions. He looked timid and, you know, overwhelmed at times in certain instances, as of the rest of the offense, because this is the first time they're playing with it. You can't simulate the noise of an environment, the speed of a defense, the adjustments you have to make on the fly, and then adapt to how he runs the game, how he calls it, how his cadence sounds, how he says hut, how he delivers the football. Does he throw it as fast or deliver it as soon rather than Drew Brees? Because, you know, Ben, we'll be at practice, man, and in this training camp, I might have even told you this on a past Monday, when there was a play at practice where Brees just kept delivering the football to a point, there were two incompletions, and as the ball hit the second, you know, bounce, Curtis Johnson was yelling at the receiver that they either ran the route too deep or they ran it too short, but the ball was being placed where it's supposed to be. That's why he's a Hall of Famer. So he can throw the ball with more anticipation. He knows where everyone on the field is going to be. When we have former players on, offense or defense, they will tell stories of Drew Brees walking into their position meeting groups and telling what he sees from the guy that they're covering. He knows everything on the field. It's ridiculous, I think, to expect that Teddy can do that in week one. This was his first meaningful game. The guy said he had tears coming down his face during a national anthem. So I think as more snaps come, I think more comfort will come with the offense, and I think you'll see more drives like that, to where he will get a sense and feel on how players are, and I think vice versa. But look, when you got 13, you got 41, you're already ahead of the game, man, because they're two of the best at their position. Just deliver the football to them, and then the defense realized they had to pick it up on their side. But on offense, like you're saying, look, you only targeted Jared Cook twice, and I got people saying that he's a free agent bust already. We was only throwing the ball twice. I don't know what do you want him to do. So either he's not getting open or they're not, you know, delivering the football to him.
Gus Cattingill, ESPN 100.3 in New Orleans, our guest. I would say the more, I don't know about alarming, but the thing that catches my attention, he went an entire half almost without targeting Michael Thomas. We saw a lot of that in the game against the Rams at the end of the first half as well. And I always said that Brees just finds open. But I think what I'm realizing now is that 13 was usually open. And I don't know if that's quite the rapport that Teddy has with him yet, but I'm sure he'll develop it.
I would add that Brees also throws him open, I think, a lot of times. Sure. And I think he understands where he's going to be, and he has that second language that's developed, you know, with him. But again, you know, he found the ability to be able to do that with him early, even as a rookie. But he's also had a couple of seasons to develop it with him and understanding. Because, look, I can guarantee you what he's seeing. He's not open. You know why? Because he's Michael Thomas. So they're covering him pretty good. He's seeing double coverage. He's seeing a safety roll that way. He's seeing the corner on him. And Michael Thomas is not a speedy guy. He's not a guy that's going to launch off the line. He's going to use his body and his physical ability to get open. So you know, Ben, you played football back in the day, man, in the backyard or in the street or, you know, whatever. There's always that one guy that's just sort of big, just throw it around him, or he's taller than everybody else. I had a friend of mine, Sean, at Brother Martin back in the day. It was easy. I'd count 2 1,000s. He was on the track team. And I'd throw it as far as I could and about 10 yards to the left or right of where he was running, and then I let him go get the ball. It made me look like a great quarterback. I am not Peyton Manning. But when you have a guy that can outrun everybody or could be more physical than everyone, it makes it a lot easier for you to do that. So I think that's what he's going to learn. Drew throws balls where there are just no windows, and he just trusts that receiver. He knows he's going to go back shoulder. He's going to go low. He's going to go high. He talks it in through that practice. You'll see it in camp or in OTAs. You will see him tell receivers, he'll tell you on Wednesdays when he does his media session, that he works on extra little nuances to where he and the receiver know what he wants when he wants it. That's years of experience with that group and what he wants. Teddy's been away for the game in almost 2 years, and that was his first start. I think you're going to progressively see him get better. I mean, that is a guy that did get to the postseason. He can make plays. I got to imagine, dude, if you were a ball of nerves watching that game against Seattle, imagine what he was like.
The defense and special teams, Gus, as we've covered, outstanding. But yeah. You take on this Dallas defense. And last year they gave even Breeze problems over in the Big D. So knowing that they're coming to town, how do you think the game plan changes and evolves on offense?
I think it's what you saw in Seattle and then at one. This is a really big challenge for the Saints, but I also think it's the first challenge for Dallas. No disrespect to the Giants, but they were not very good in that opening game, right, to start the season. Washington struggles on offense. They don't really have a lot of weapons. And, I mean, the Dolphins are a joke. They dropped touchdowns yesterday. They fumbled inside the 5-yard line, Kenyon Drake. So this is also Dallas's first real challenge of the season. Now, their offensive coordinator change is going to add a lot to it. They can deliver the football downfield. They've been able to do that. They had a pair of 100-yard rushers yesterday. So the Saints have to stop the run. That's first and foremost, and then you take your chances. The problem is this. Marshawn Lattimore is not really playing as great as I think a lot of people expect him to. I just saw a tweet just now. Most yards allowed in coverage, all quarterbacks. In 2019, Marshawn Lattimore is leading right now at 334 yards. Now, he had 12 tackles yesterday, 9 of them solo. Is it coverage? Is it lack of stake right now in Marcus Williams? But the game plan is simple. You got to stop the run and just trust that you can stop Dak versus Amari Cooper and your secondary. And I think what you're going to have to see on the offensive side is what you saw some with Seattle. Ben, didn't it feel like the Saints ran more than 88 yards yesterday? It felt like they ran for over 100 yards, right? They didn't. They rushed for less than 100. But you felt that at times when they wanted to run, they could. And I think that's going to be key, to just maintain, use efficient drives to where they get points. Got to have 7 instead of 3. But I think it'll be a battle. And I said it on the show today, I think the Saints fans are going to have a say in this one. This is a chance that they can maybe help this team go. If you would have told me without Drew Brees, you can go 3-1 in the first quarter of the season, everyone would take that. That's where you are right now. If you get this win, right up there with a lot of those teams in the NFC, and you lost Drew Brees. So it's a big, big game, man.
Gus, let's get you out of here with a chuckle. My friends and I had endless enjoyment in hearing Drew Brees' statement that he wasn't attending the game because he was aggressively rehabbing his thumb. How the hell does somebody, like playing video games, how do you aggressively rehab a thumb?
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you that was. He drove down to Seattle, San Diego from L.A. He's aggressively enjoying his house still going in rain in Seattle. But that was. Look, I hear you. But look, there's that fearless leader, Ben, letting you know that I don't know how you're aggressively rehabbing on Sunday or on Saturday, but because my guess would be you probably wouldn't want to do too much to it, but from everyone I know, when you get surgery, man, the next day, the next few hours, they want you rehabbing already. So maybe he's out there playing, you know, 1-2-3 thumb war or something. I don't know. Maybe him and Baylen were going at it.
It's not a bad thought. Gus, you're the man. We appreciate you every Monday. Enjoy your evening.
For sure, man. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Ben.
The one and only, Gus Kattengill. My friends and I had some different takes. I don't know that we should even explore that on the program. Some things that you could do That might be a really bad idea for a backup sink or swim question of the day. How do you aggressively rehab a thumb? Like 90 single dudes just started dialing 706-0111. We're going to turn you all away from calling in. But what we will remind you that is coming up, and you should call in for this, it's the Opelousas Rotary Club Auction. It returns October 1, 6 to 10 p.m. live on KDCG Channel 50.2. Hundreds of items will be available to bid on, everything from sports memorabilia, household items, hair care, vacation packages, home decor, and much more. So make sure to call in October 1 and get a head start saving on your Christmas presents. Most gift certificates will sell for 50 to 80% off, and all proceeds go to charitable causes. It's the Opelousas Rotary Club Auction, and it returns on October 1 to KDCG TV. We return one more time in the 4 o'clock hour. On the other side of this break, going to talk some Cajuns and open it back up. Your sink or swim question of the day, not the thumb war one, the one about LSU's offense versus their defense. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
This is Bob Marlin, head coach of Raging Cajuns Basketball.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Seriously, Clint, how many points do you think Breeze put up on Seattle's Madden defense as he was just dominating the joysticks? If that's how he's aggressively rehabbing, there's no question in my mind that dude was out there just blowing people up on Madden.
Oh, exactly. You can about imagine he was tearing it up on all Madden mode. Mind you, the game's probably still broken a month later.
I do want to change topics. We've spent time on the Saints. Hats off to our man Gus Kattengill. Just every time he comes on, I learn some things and I have a lot of fun. So we appreciate his time. We've talked LSU. We can open that back up. Your sink or swim question of the day, are you more amazed by LSU's offense or dismayed by the defense? It's been complete and utter one-way traffic so far. Amazed by LSU's offense. I also am swimming there, but with some caution, because I see places against certain teams where it may not necessarily be shootout material, and it may not be your choice. It just may not go your way. It may be weather. It could be anything. Does it mean LSU's screwed? No, because they're not healthy yet. Because they're still gaining continuity. But I'm also not going to completely make excuses for them. Defensively, they're just missing the mark in some cases as well. But the pace of play does have something to do with it. Had a really good discussion about that earlier in the program. We can open it back up. 706-0111. Hey, while we wait to talk more with you, I do want to get into the Cajuns, Clint. Before the season, I had the game in Athens, Ohio, pegged as a loss. By the time we got to game week, I had changed my mind. I told you that it would be a Cajuns win, but I saw this one as a one-score game either way. I don't care what the final score was. That was not indicative of a one-score game. The Cajuns absolutely planted a flag with the style of play. Ron Roberts' defense gets all the credit in the world for me. Again, kind of like the Saints. They allowed some points late when it was getting relatively academic. Doesn't mean they'll feel good about that, but in my mind, they should. I thought that defense was outstanding against what had been not a good but a borderline great pass offense. And I'm also learning more and more that I think Elijah Mitchell is the best running back on the team. You know that I've been banging my head against the wall saying it's Trey Regis for the better part of a year and a half. The good news is you got both of them, and they can keep rolling. And you got more than just those two. But Elijah Mitchell is a freak. And the way this team's playing right now, I love their chances of going to Statesboro, giving Georgia Southern the blues, and then ending September at 4-1 before a huge, huge stretch that's coming in October.
And I think that's going to be absolutely huge as this game coming up this Saturday against Georgia Southern. That triple option offense has been something that's bugged the Cajuns to no end. We looked last year against Coastal Carolina, and they destroyed them with that triple option. But I think now that Billy Napier, he's used to being up against a triple option offense, he's going to make this a lot easier for this defense to understand what's going on.
So that's looking forward. Look back with me.
Yeah.
Give me some of your superlatives for the way the Cajuns played on defense at Ohio, because it's polar opposite, right? from what's coming against the triple option. They saw a pass-happy attack, and there was a single digit on the board as far as the score for Ohio through a lot of that ball game.
Yeah.
That
and two field goals of that
is very impressive to me, because you and I predicted a bit of a barn burner, and the final score indicates it sort of was one, but that wasn't a barn burner for much of the contest.
It was impressive to see what the Raging Cajuns were doing. It was, I had not seen that kind of defensive performance in quite some time. But the biggest thing for me was to see, we're talking about the defense, the fact that when Chauncey Manack went down, we don't know anything about his status for this Saturday. Probably not good, but we saw a guy like Andre Jones step up in his place and perform at a huge level. I think that was the biggest takeaway for me from the defensive side of the football. Everybody else did their job. We saw a lot of great interceptions. We saw a lot of great plays, but I feel like the fact that now we're seeing a lot more of that depth be put to good use, you're not having to worry, oh, hey, like, it's a next man up mentality all the time, and we're seeing them perform at that level all the time.
I'm sure a man of your stature noticed what App State did over the weekend.
Yes, I did. Beat North Carolina.
On the road?
Yep.
At Chapel Hill?
Yeah.
That is your statement win. Yep. It could have been Mississippi State, right, if the Cajuns were able to pull off the improbable, darn near impossible. This isn't quite on the same level. I believe it's October the 12th, whatever that Wednesday is, when the Cajuns have App State coming to town. If that contest has a 4-1...
October 9th.
All right. Come on now. Let me have my moment.
Wait.
I know. You're the corrector. It's what you do. You were right. I was wrong. Nonetheless, that's got an opportunity to be your statement game, because you've played them twice in a year. You lost both times, but that was both times in Boone. The Cajuns, with the win against App State, if they could go to 5-1, stranglehold on the Western Division, and maybe even starting to receive some votes toward the top 25, wow. But I know there's a hurdle in Statesboro before then, but they're heading towards very, very intriguing heights in year two of Billy Napier's tenure. All right, let's wind down our first hour of today's show with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Wine, and the kind that's got the H in there, not the stuff you drink. Alabama whines enough about playing early non-conference kickoffs, and wouldn't you know it, next time at the bat, SEC has a decision to make. LSU versus Utah State, 11 a.m. on SEC Network on October the 5th. A little bit of whining can go a long way if you live that close to the conference office. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back. Ruff and Rodrigue at 5:15. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette, 103.7 The Game, a Delta Media station. Call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663.
Delta Media. We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Big first hour. Took a lot of your calls on our sink or swim question of the day. Happy to trot it back out. Are you more amazed by LSU's offense after 66 points in the Music City, or dismayed by the defense? Certainly not the performance fans have become used to, but I think the bottom line is that it's a team and a style of play that nobody in Baton Rouge has become used to. This offense, just a completely different beast. So call us up, let us know, 706-0111. Plenty of time in the opening hour on the Saints' improbable win in Seattle. Defense, special teams, both dominant at times. A punt return for a touchdown early takes a lot of pressure off of Teddy Bridgewater in that offense. A forced fumble return for six, ditto in the first half. And in between, a slow start and a bit of a slow foot-off-the-gas finish for the Saints offense. In between, Bridgewater, AK-41, did start to cook a little bit. And now there's a lot of pressure taken off. A home game coming up this Sunday night against the Dallas Cowboys. We went in on both of those subjects. And while we will take your calls, I also had earmarked for the top of this hour a little SEC conversation. So indulge me, will you? Auburn goes on the road and beats Texas A&M. And a lot like the Cajuns at Ohio, that final score may be fairly sucked in and tight. It wasn't for most of the game. I was incredibly impressed with the way that Bo Nix and that offense came out firing. Auburn's defensive front looks like they could be the best that the SEC has to offer. I mean, truly special. The way they got after Kellen Mond and company, they don't look like some of those LSU defenses from the earlier part of this decade, but they got like the similar type of jersey numbers, right? Guys that are out there wearing like 5 and 3 and just kind of fat. Let's call it what it is. So, yeah, they didn't look like, you know, Brockers and Benny Logan, especially not Montgomery and Mingo, but wow, Auburn's defensive line is for real, and that's a big win going on the road and winning in College Station. And so suddenly, that kind of unquestioned top three of the SEC pecking order, Alabama, Georgia, LSU. And I think a lot of people may see it in that order, but LSU certainly putting their hat in the ring. You're going to have to score with us to beat us this year. And Georgia, with an impressive win, albeit a bit of a snoozer for the first half of that game, but they woke up late and put Notre Dame to bed. A game in Athens that looked like it might have had as much energy and as good of an atmosphere as any we've seen so far this season, maybe with LSU, Texas, and Austin being right up there in the same type of stratosphere. But how about that top three in the SEC? And is it a top four? Does Auburn deserve some consideration? Maybe some of the things that they're dispelling about what a true freshman quarterback can do and right away. Now, I also think that Texas A&M is a year maybe two away. Kellen Mond has done a lot of special things leading that team at quarterback, but we discussed it Friday when we talked a little Auburn football. We had our guy Jason Caldwell on the show. He thought that for as much hype as A&M's getting and as good as we think they can be with that endowment, with the head coach, with the recruiting, that the time may not be just yet. And I'm not going to judge it based off of losses to Clemson and to a good Auburn team. But certainly A&M isn't up there in the top three, maybe even the top four in the Southeastern Conference. I'll get your take on that. How do you rank the top of the Conference of Dixie? And right now there are four in the top eight of the country. When you look at those big guns that I just discussed, would you put Auburn amongst them? 706-0111. Clint, I'll get your take while we have a moment. How do you kind of shuffle those four around? You look at Auburn, LSU, Alabama on the western side, Georgia from the east. Put them all in one bag. Shake them up. How do you rank them today?
Today, I think it's obvious. I think you need to wind up putting in the Alabama Crimson Tide number one, without a doubt, the way they've been performing. Sure, it's been against relative cupcakes, but I feel like they should be number one as we stand right here, right now. LSU, I think, stands at number two. I think they stand above Georgia, and a lot of it has to do with the big win that LSU had over Texas, the huge performance they had. And when you look at that Georgia-Notre Dame game, I felt like that would have been a lot more of a one-sided affair, because I feel like Notre Dame, again, I
thought everybody came on this show last week. Cousin Dino, Dean Leggy, everybody named Dean, basically. Blaine Viator, this is going to be a slaughter fest. It definitely wasn't.
It was more of a struggle, and it seemed like Georgia could have wound up losing that ball game to Notre Dame, if not for, obviously, Kelly being Kelly. I feel like that was just less than ideal finish to that ball game for them. I'm going with Georgia number three, and I'll put Auburn top rounding out that top four, because I feel like that Oregon game, that's going to loom a lot for me. It was like just the fact that that was a lot more competitive than maybe it should have been.
Today must be the first day of fall. It must be getting a little colder. Darn near a cold day in hell, because we completely agree on this. I mean,
wow.
Completely and utterly. LSU's road win at Texas is more impressive than Georgia's home win against Notre Dame.
Yep.
I don't think that you need to dig too much further than that. And outside of those two big non-conference games we just mentioned, the only other common opponent is Vandy. Georgia played at Vandy and won a game where their defense was a lot better against the Commodores than LSU's was. But here's the other thing. LSU hung up 66 in Music City. Georgia scored about half that many points. And so it's tough to play the transitive properties game, but I think for a lot of reasons, I would put LSU as the second best team in the SEC right now. And even saying that, what has Bama proven? I think we give them the benefit of the doubt, but Bama this year is not quite Bama that everyone's used to. And it's because of injuries. They've been forced to put freshmen in certain places, and they're just not maybe as utterly dominant as we expect. And even as those words leave my mouth, I understand that in a similar vein, LSU defensively has been injured. They're not exactly what we've become accustomed to. But while they're trying to plug and play, the Tigers are giving up 34 points to the likes of Vandy. The Tigers are giving up 400-plus yards passing to Sam Ellinger in Texas. So, again, LSU's played at Texas. Bama's toughest game is who so far? I don't know. Is it Southern Miss or is it Duke? Toss-up. But the answer is, doesn't matter. Neither team is very good. Toughest game, I guess, probably was actually South Kakalaka. And use that for whatever talking point you would like. I think that a case could be made that LSU is right up there, 1A, with Bama so far. But it's a fascinating time to be covering and following LSU football. They're not playing the conventional style. It's the offense that everyone wanted without the defense that everyone's used to. And yes, one does affect the other. I said to lead off the show that maybe people are giving a little bit too much percentage of the pie chart to that whole offense affects defense thing. Scoring too quickly. More possessions in a game is going to affect the defense that adversely. I said earlier in the show, maybe it's 5% of the pie chart. It's a good call that we had earlier in the program saying, well, if you look at the numbers, LSU was on the field maybe an average of a quarter more defensively against Vandy. And so how much should we be assigning the blame game, if we want to call it that, to the defense not being what we're accustomed to? I'll grant that maybe it's more than 5%, but giving excuses to LSU's defense allowing 38 to Vandy, I'm not in the business of doing that either. I'm more impressed by the offense, don't get me wrong. And I wouldn't change a thing. It'd be dumb to do that. But the defense has to get healthier. They've got a bye week to do that. They've got an opportunity to play Utah State and figure out pass scheme-wise what they want to do to get after my brother Love that's playing quarterback for the Aggies, what they want to do in the secondary, replacing Todd Harris and a couple of guys. The defense has to continue to take steps forward. Otherwise, you might find yourself in a tight quarters game that Burrow can't throw for 450 yards and get his way out of.
Exactly. That's going to wind up hurting them, especially once they get into the meat and potatoes of conference play. But you brought this back up, and I was glad you did, because I actually pulled up the numbers and crunched them all when it comes to the first four games of last year and this year. Last year, they averaged 31 minutes and 10 seconds in terms of time of possession over those four games.
In a 60-minute game?
Yes.
All right.
Because we obviously the 7 overtime game was at the end of the year. But then we have 28 minutes and 20 seconds this year through four games. Basically, they've cut about 4 minutes off of their time of possession offensively.
They're scoring quickly.
Yep.
They're scoring often. It's not a problem. The defense just has to start to do its part at a higher clip, and I think there's a chance they will. I'll ask our next guest that exact question, and we'll talk some Raging Cajuns football as well. UL off to a 3-1 start with an opportunity to make it 4-1 at Georgia Southern this weekend. Stick with us. Ruffin Rodriguez joins us on the other side. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Sports. Mornings with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Get in on the conversation. Call up.
Greatest performance in offensive history. I mean, you know, over four hour game, 4 and 15 minutes, whatever it was. I think one of the announcers during the game even said the longest game in history or something. I thought he was being facetious, but I realized he was telling the truth. But when you throw the ball that much, and hey, look, give it to Vandy. They moved the ball pretty well in our defense, so you know, made it for an even longer game. And but man, what can't you say about how easy it is for Joe Burrow to have that kind of protection and to throw those? I see it's a four-headed monster now with Sullivan in there, and then you got Mathis coming in, and you got a bunch of man. You got guys to go back him up that'd be just as good.
So we know the receivers, as you just alluded to, very good. We understand that infusion of Joe Brady has helped. Steve Ensminger knows what he wants to do. But the reason that they're this much better and they're this much different than in years past, it's got to be mostly Burrow, right?
Burrow's training, Brady's influence, and Steve giving the keys. You know, as a true head coach, just like Les Miles was, Nick Saban, all of them, and they get stubborn, you know, for a time being. And they want to go conservative. They want to keep their defense off the field and all these things. And Ed made a commitment, and he said, we're going to do it. We're going to go this way, and you guys have the keys and go for it. So basically what you have is Steve Ensminger, who's been asking for this, gets Joe Brady, who's a Sean Payton disciple, and you see how good of a coordinator he is with his backup quarterback this weekend. And you have an offensive line that's coming together. And Joe Burrow, who works very well with Joe Brady and Steve Ensminger. So, and he has a year under his belt. So it's a perfect storm for everybody on offense.
We've been asking. Well, yeah, you know what? You probably are about to say what I was going to ask you. I mean, how much of an impact is it having on the defense right now?
A ton. Look, I remember when John Chavis left LSU over a contract dispute, and he was at Ruffino's in Baton Rouge, and he was eating, and I said, Coach, why are you? Now, I love Jimbo, but why are you going to? No, not Jimbo. He was the other guy before.
Kevin Sumlin.
Other coach. So, yeah, I said, I heard he's a great guy. I said, but, Coach, you're a 3 yards of kind of dust kind of defense. You want to bend no break. You do all this stuff. I'm like, your defense stays out. You know, you don't want your defense out in the field that much. I said, we'll be fine. I think he gave up more yards those next 2 years than he ever has in his entire career. It does. It has everything to do with the way you practice, the way the tempo of the game. Scoring that quick means they have to go right back out on defense. In defense, you have to run to the play nonstop. I think on offense, where you just block and kind of jog, you know, those guys have to run to the ball, and it's nonstop, and you have to be unbelievable conditioning. And when it's hot this time of year, the way it is, man, it's hard for them. So it's been tough on them. They got to find a way though, and you see signs of it happening, but until they figure out how to tackle better, when you're all American, Grant Delpit is missing tackles. You know, that's a big question mark. And are his legs tired? What's going on? They have to figure that out, and they got an off week to do it.
I do want to get to the Cajuns before we do so, Ruffin. The latest over at Ruffino's on the river. Today's the first day of fall, so hopefully the weather makes it an even better experience over the next few months.
Oh yeah, it's been gorgeous. Big night last night with Carrie Underwood in town. Nobody told me, but the staff knew. And they had about 500 people in the restaurant before the Carrie Underwood concert. So I think they drank inside a house and home. But, you know, I need more Carries and Garth Brooks to come to town. Man, they're amazing. But this has been great. The bartenders, the staff, the private parties that we were doing them now, and the rehearsal dinners and, you know, company functions. I mean, you know, this is a pharmaceutical function. There's so many things that you can do there and plan a party. It's really working out amazing. And, you know, the Cajuns are on TV, the Tigers are on TV. We had the 2 70-inch TVs in the bar. You can watch it in and drink a cold beer and enjoy the, man, two higher scoring offenses we've had in South Louisiana in a long time.
That's well said. What do you think's harder to prepare for? Nashville with LSU fans coming to town to drink it out of all its liquor, or you guys having to deal with Carrie Underwood yesterday?
It's pretty close. I tell you, we didn't have the volume that Nashville did, but man, I tell you, when you get a country music superstar coming to Lafayette, watch out, man. It doesn't matter what night of the week it is. The beverages are flowing. And Ben, to match that, when I didn't go this weekend to Vanderbilt, but I did it in Texas. My friends that I have in Texas, I told everybody, make a call. I tell them, when you think you have enough Crown Royal and Bud Light, you don't. Even if you think you do, you don't. So even every time you think you do, add more, because it will be gone.
Oh, when you're right, you're right. Okay, let's get to the Cajuns. You and I don't think, ever had a doubt that Billy Napier and Rob Sale would have this offense humming along pretty well, and they're doing just that. Defensively is where they won that game at Ohio Saturday. They start doing that on a regular basis, Ruffin. Katie bar the door. They have an opportunity, if they keep doing that, to host the Sun Belt Championship at Cajun Field in December.
Oh, man, would that be wonderful. This coaching staff is showing. These kids are believing. They're drinking the Kool-Aid. They drink the Kool-Aid, and they're listening and they're following. And they cut down the turnovers. They're doing all the things that Coach Billy has asked them to do from the beginning. Cut down the minimal mistakes and turnovers. And what you've seen is a team get better and better every game. I could go back to that first game and not have those turnovers, and we beat Mississippi State. So look out for a pretty good run here with Coach Napier and his staff, and obviously moving the ball. The defense is getting better and better at tackling. That's the big thing, and that's what they're going to emphasize on.
And they're going to have to tackle, certainly, this Saturday. Before we let you go, Ruffin, Cajuns at Georgia Southern. If they can close that game out somehow, they'll get to 4-1 before the first bye week of the season. But it's tough when you go play at Statesboro, and they're going to run that triple option all day long.
Well, first thing he needs to do is call his buddy down the road, Coach O, and they can tell him exactly how to stop it, because I've never seen a team stop the triple option the way LSU did in that first game. And watch that film and the way they did it. And I think they will. I think they're going to mimic it, and they're going to put the players in place. And I like the Cajuns big over Georgia Southern.
Yeah, they're favorites already on the road, so we'll see if they can follow through on it. Ruffin, always a great time to do this. Let's catch up again soon. Enjoy your week, my man.
You can, man. Have a good one. Go Tigers. Go Cajuns.
There you go. Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Rufino's on the River, and owner of a pretty good mantra, frankly, if you're going to host a party, and you're going to invite people from South Louisiana to it, especially if you're out of state, especially if football's involved, and especially if, there's a football game that starts at 11 a.m., and that means they get to do whatever they want between, 3:30 p.m. when a long game ends and 3:30 a.m. when you shut down your bar. Just when you think you have enough Bud Light and Crown Royal, trust me, you don't. Brilliant. So glad we got to catch up with Ruffin Rodrigue. Our next scheduled guest, James Buehr, is coming aboard in about 35 minutes. Between now and then, I'm excited to take your phone calls. We'll talk some more about the LSU win at Vandy. What comes next for these Tigers? They got a bye week now, then an 11 a.m. matchup with Utah State on the first Saturday in October. And we'll keep looking forward to what comes next for these Raging Cajuns as well. But as we head into a break, saddle up, Acadiana. The Angola Prison Rodeo. It's coming back. And 103.7 The Game wants to give you a family four-pack of tickets to the wildest show in the South. It's easy and free to enter. All you have to do, text the word Angola, A-N-G-O-L-A, Angola, to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to the Angola Prison Rodeo. Halfway through our 5 o'clock hour, we will take your calls when we return. We'll throw some shade as well. Clint's been waiting on this one all day long. So stick with us. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you quick, fast, and in a hurry on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Sports Radio Update starts now.
We'll be right back.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
When you think you have enough Crown Royal and Bud Light, you don't. Even if you think you do, you don't. So even every time you think you do, add more, because it will be gone.
That is top shelf analysis. Don't let that wise ass that brings us in with this smooth voice every segment tell you different. That's the top shelf analysis that you come for. Doesn't just apply to bars in Nashville. Doesn't just apply to Rufino's on the River when there's a Garth Brooks or a Carrie Underwood concert. That sound might just have to make some reoccurring appearances on this program. You think you have enough of those two items, you just don't. Hey, quick nod to our guy, Coach Chad, on Twitter. He heard me in the first hour. He agrees and he doesn't. More of doesn't. But let's share his tweet. Ben, offense is scoring at a record pace. I agree. We have some worries, but our D is seeing a lot of snaps. Coach Chad clearly talking LSU football. No question. How much is it affecting things? We could probably twist and turn and split hairs. But I do think with that defensive line back and right, I do think with linebackers put in place where they need to be, and with Delpit playing, I mean, even at three quarters of a clip as he was last year, then yes, they are going to be fine. But we need to see those things, and they haven't happened just yet. Is it cause for some concern? I think so. Is it cause for panic? Absolutely not. Because right now, Joe Burbank is absolutely dicing up everything he sees across from him. Doesn't matter who the defense is lately. All right, we'll get back to our sink or swim question a little bit later in the hour. That's more of a 4 o'clock thing. What do we do in the 5 o'clock hour? Our good friends at Patio Center, they appreciate it. Well, we remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and the standing seam metal awnings. And know that you can trust in the management top down, starting with Mark, to sit down and fulfill a vision that they create with you. And they could do it before LSU, the Cajuns, and the Saints go barreling toward the postseason. They're ready to up your patio game. All you have to do to start, go to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Nothing finer than Philly fans when it comes to just pelting people with batteries, when it comes to booing Santa, and even when it comes to rescuing children from a fire. Clint, please explain and then give some of my favorite sound, you know, since the Ruff and Rodri clip.
I think the Ruff and Rodri clip might beat that one because that was absolutely phenomenal, but it's still some good stuff nonetheless. And, of course, if you've been watching the Philadelphia Eagles out there on the football field, one name in particular has popped out, Nelson Agholor, with a lot of drops, including a fumble in the first half in that loss to the Lions yesterday. Weirdly enough, the Lions are undefeated. But that being said, a local hero was catching babies as small children who were being thrown from the window of a fire in the middle of the night. And this is coming from Steve Lindsay of CBS, the Philly CBS affiliate. And he had the most Philly soundbite, as he put it.
I seen a guy hanging out the window, you know, screaming that his kids was in there and things like that. So I ran to the back door, see if it was open, and it was. I ran upstairs, and then I was greeted with smoke. I ran back downstairs. By that time, the ladder truck was pulling up. And ironically, being one of my old coworkers took the ladder off the truck, raised it up, and was assisting people down. My man just started throwing babies out the window. Wow. We was catching them, unlike Agholor.
Throwing babies out the window. We was catching them. Not like Agholor. That's
the best.
You can't say anything to a man who's out there saving children from a burning fire, but you also have to give all the credit in the world to a man that finds an opportunity, Clint, to not only literally save lives,
yeah,
but also throw shade at his favorite football team and their overpaid wide receiver. that's next level shade, and it might belong in the top five. I mean, in the history of us doing this since the folks at Patio Center turned the faucet on, like this is probably top five of the way the phrase throwing shade was meant to be used.
Exactly.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
And frankly, that awesome tale with the even better soundbite rescued me from having to go with the Cleveland Browns running a 4th-and-9 draw on an almost do-or-die play.
Was that less Milesian almost? Like,
no, Miles wouldn't have done that.
I'm saying just like...
Miles would have run the draw on 3rd-and-9 instead of the punt. 4th-and-9 draw is unheard of.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told myself I wasn't going to go down this road. I just said that you rescued me from having to do that.
Whoops.
I can't even rescue myself, right? Because I just want to go down into the foxhole here for a moment.
Why not?
I'm not always driving around during the Jim Rome show. Today I was. And Rome led off his program by giving kudos to Freddie Kitchens for owning the fact that it was a bad call. What? Jimbo, or Romulus, or whatever your minions call you these days, what sense does that make? I understand when you say that none of that causes you to want to jump off their bandwagon. That's one thing, and I can get behind that. But the fact that Kitchens owned one of the most boneheaded play calls in a long time, you're giving him credit for that?
That was weird.
That's not the take that I tune in for, and that's not one that I can rally behind. So keep doing your thing, Rome. You're syndicated across the country, my man. You're on television. You're that dude. One day maybe I'll climb that ladder and rescue children and throw them out of a window and not drop them like Aguilar. I know that I'm not there right now, Romulus, but boy, that take was hard to swallow. That was a pill that required several glasses of water. Freddie Kitchens gets points because he owned that play call. I'm just going to throw it to break. I don't have any more for that. When I return, I'll try to give you better takes than that. And we got James Buehrs coming aboard talking LCA, Acadiana, and a lot more when it comes to prep football in our region. Don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We don't drop anything on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Hey guys, Raymond Parks III here, host of
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Going in deep all show long. LSU, the Saints, Cajuns as well. You want to talk any and all, we got some time for you. Might be the last time we get to chop it up on those three programs, franchises, for today's show. Only because we've got alternative programming from 6 to 6:30. James Buehrs joins us to talk prep football at 6. And I do want to devote some show today to the Houston bleeping Astros. Three bombs yesterday from George Springer. Another victory for Justin Verlander. An airtight Cy Young race between teammates, Verlander and Cole. Yordan Alvarez, rookie of the year. Oh, I think so. Alex Bregman, MVP. Probably not, but the case is getting more compelling. Manager of the year, A.J. Hinch. Okay, I'm starting to get a little emotional and excited. I'll save some of that for about 6:20 p.m. But you want to call in? Well, Clint, I was about to pitch it back to football. I think you just got a little emotional and excited over there. I started talking Strohs, and you just lit up like a firecracker.
Nobody's more excited than me, than probably Steve Sparks of the Astros Radio Network. The dude was litty during that post game, which seemed like it lasted forever, but I wish it would have lasted forever because that was amazing, all the post game festivities.
I thought you were about to disrespect Blue right in front of my face on a program where you know he's out there listening. Whether he's calling or able to lately, doesn't matter. Blue, you remain in my thoughts. The dude calls in about Astros when it's March. My man calls in about the Astros when it's October. every month in between.
Yep.
Probably safe to say he's a bigger Astros fan than you.
I'd probably wind up agreeing with that. But
can you own that?
Yeah, okay. I'd own that.
All right, that's fair. I mean, look, the dude's all time, so we just got to give him his propers on this show. And you know we're gonna. Let's get back to the football side of things and talk some Saints specifically. You want to call in what we witnessed yesterday in Seattle? Improbable. I think that's a fair word. Let me know what you think. 706-0111. We all picked the game, Clint. Me, you, Blaine. We all had the Seahawks, maybe varying degrees of whether it was a 3-point loss, a 10-point loss, but we thought it probably would be in that type of vicinity. If I'd have come to you after the game and say Russell Wilson's throwing for 300-plus, he's going to run for a touchdown, the Saints are going to go under 300 yards of offense. By the way, you and Blaine can kiss the ring after the show. That'll be a different story. If I'd have told you those things, you'd have told me the Saints got beat by what? 14, 17?
Yeah, that would sound about right.
Difference being the Saints scored 14 points. I'm sorry, let's mix the PAT. The Saints 13. Scored 13 points.
It was
on
a weird
defense
game.
And on special teams. Moorhead was maybe as good as I've ever seen him, and that says a lot because I think he's one of the top five most impactful players on the Saints
yep.
team. Make all the jokes about a punter that you want. That's just a fact. They were unbelievable holistically yesterday. Defense, special teams, and then Alvin Kamara. I would say offense, but again, I'm going to repeat, Alvin Kamara. You can't tackle the guy. We had a running joke that was going on yesterday, but I'm not so sure it's a joke. I think the Saints could have a grease guy on the sideline, and they wouldn't be underpaying this cat if he was making 50 stacks a year to just grease down Alvin Kamara before possessions. He never goes down on first impact. Some of it's slippery. Some of it's sheer physicality. His legs never stop churning. He spins out of it. He runs through it. He'll go over it. Kamara is unbelievable. And the load that he shouldered in that game yesterday, especially in the second half, I understand the Saints didn't eclipse 100 yards on the ground. But running it, catching it, scoring in both varieties, he is something special. And look at this. You speak of the man, and he comes out. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Hey, enough of that football stuff. Blue is with us. Blue, it's great to hear from you. The Stros have now won 3 straight division titles. I know you're excited about that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I was impressed that the way they played. But the shortstop that was hurt, he's hurt all the time. I can't believe they're going to say, well, he needs to rest. Rest? He ain't played for 2 months. He don't need to rest. He needs to play.
The man did hurt himself getting a massage, so I don't know what you prescribed for that, Blue.
But listen, I'm impressed that you remembered me. I just heard you say my name on the radio, and I really appreciate that you still think of me as I think of y'all.
Hey, when we think Astros, you're always in our thoughts, brother.
And that football game yesterday, I don't know what it is, but it seems like every time the official makes a mistake, it's a big one. It ain't just a little one. If they would have overturned that fumble yesterday, there'd have been some mad people around everywhere.
No question. They got that one right. The Saints finally benefited. Blue, great to hear from you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
There you go. There you have it, Clint. Speaking it into existence. Just straight up LeVar Ball 101 on the program today.
Exactly.
You know what, though? Let's take that baton and run with it because we were talking Saints before he called. And he ended up on that point. The right call. Here's the thing. Every time I watch a game that Tony Romo broadcasts, I learn some things and I enjoy it. It's uncanny how good he is. And to Blue's point about the fumble return for a touchdown, if that goes the other way and the Saints get jobbed for the second straight week on the West Coast, there's no telling how that game turns out. That team, Seattle, was going in. I mean, they were red zone adjacent when that went down, right? If I'm not mistaken. And so for the Saints to get the right call at the right time, Romo's point just struck a chord with me. The idea that you have to call that a fumble on the field and then you can overturn it in the review. When you leave yourself no wiggle room with the way that you call it on the field, you're almost damned if you do, damned if you don't when it gets to the replay, right? And so I thought Romo was spot on yesterday. And that one finally went the way that it needed to. But if you watch it enough times, there's no question the ball came out before his knee was down.
Exactly, and that was the big thing that everybody was complaining about. That was a big reason why everybody was kind of butthurt about everything that happened in the Rams game, was the fact that they did not – it was a procedural mistake, a lot like what we saw in week one. That was kind of the big frustration a lot of us had, not because of the fact they missed the call, like the no call, but it was more because of what happened with it being a procedural mistake. And, you know, we're talking about that NFC title game and everything in between. Apparently, if you watched the Eagles-Lions game yesterday – they had a missed face mask call. And, of course, wouldn't you know, it was the same exact crew that was part of the NFC title game.
Have you noticed that there are more officials that are wearing glasses now? There was one for Saints Seahawks yesterday,
yes.
And my boy was spot on. He said, I think they're just planting glasses on guys that don't even need prescriptions anymore. We just want you to think that they're a little smarter than they are, and we're putting a little more attention to detail in. So it's a good job of whoever's planting bifocals on these human beings. Let me correct myself, by the way. Those two things aren't possible.
Yeah.
I said earlier that the Seahawks were red zone adjacent. Okay, no, not true. They were coming out of their own end zone. That's why the return was so short.
There we go.
I know words and I know math. Sometimes it just takes a while, Clint. And I do know that it's good to hear from Blue. We got time. We can hear from you. 706-0111, ending our 5 o'clock hour with the Saints on our brain. And I'll fast forward a little bit. Cowboys come to town. I love the point that Gus Catgill made our 4 o'clock hour. Toughest test of the year for the Saints? Maybe. I'd actually argue that at the Rams is tougher, especially when your franchise quarterback goes down in the first quarter. Toughest test of the year for Dallas? Oh, it's not even close. They've been feasting on powder puffs. They've played at home a couple of times. Now they've got a chance to come into a madhouse that is the Superdome, a place that hates Dallas Cowboys football, whether or not Breeze is healthy, and maybe you can get some more continuity. You would hope, at least. And so I think the Saints in this one, I still think they deserve to be underdogs, but I still won't count them out as much as maybe I would have 40 hours ago. That truly was an impressive all-around team performance that they put on at Seattle. So with that kind of, you know, dangling in our heads a little bit, recently in the rear view, yeah, I'm going to give them an opportunity to come out and compete in this game. And then what happens once it gets to crunch time, we'll find out. But I think the Saints have a chance to get it to the fourth quarter with this one in the balance. Will they have enough firepower offensively to get past Dak, Zeke, and company if they're rolling? Time will tell. All right, we're almost out of time. In our 5 o'clock hour, James Buers leads us off. On the other side of this break, we'll talk LCA Acadiana. And can a couple of slow starters get off the schneid? St. Martinville and Catholic New Iberia. All that and more when we return. He's Clint, I'm Ben, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports. 30 more minutes with you on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll right into our third and final hour. Welcome back in. It's B2BS. For you, that's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And halfway past this hour, we got some Monday Night Football action for you. We'll send you to the nation's capital. It'll be Bears at Redskins. That will be good for everybody, especially if you have some points you need to accrue in fantasy football. But before any of that, it's Monday. It's the 6 o'clock hour. It's our pleasure to bring aboard James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. We're ready to talk some high school football. We got the man for the job. How are you, James?
I'm doing well, Ben. How are you doing, man?
We are 3 weeks into the high school football season, and I think that you covered maybe, arguably, the most sought-after game so far, maybe, to this juncture in the season, LCA at Acadiana. Just give me the whole rundown, what the atmosphere was like, your thoughts on the result and how both teams performed.
Yeah, you know, I do think it was the biggest, I mean, at least in terms of hype and kind of just, you know, it was the most talked about game so far this year by far, in my opinion. And as far as the atmosphere goes, it lived up to it. I mean, Bill Dyson Stadium was packed. I mean, you could see that, you know, an hour before kickoff that it was going to be a great crowd. And LCA fans certainly traveled well, and Acadiana fans are some of the, you know, they always pack out their home stadium. So it made for a really cool environment. The game itself, you know, my opinion of it is kind of, I guess, fluctuated, you know, since Friday. In some ways, you could say Acadiana dominated the game, you know, at least statistically, they outgained, I think, LCA. I don't know the specific number off the top of my head, but I think it was like, I'd probably guess around 200 yards, but it was still a 7-6 game by the end of the third quarter, and that was largely due because of how well LCA played on defense. I was really impressed with LCA's front seven, the way they handled the beer. You know, Acadiana did have an 18-play, 90-yard drive, but that kind of showed you that LCA was making Acadiana work for everything they got. And, you know, LCA started the second half by forcing a fumble, recovering a fumble. So, you know, it was a struggle for Acadiana. It was by no means an easy win, but I think the key for them was what Acadiana was able to do defensively. They frankly shut down LCA's offense. Their only two touchdowns were on kickoff returns by Sage Ryan, who is just an incredible kick return. I can't say enough about that kid. But, you know, Acadiana's defense really made it hard on LCA. I mean, LCA was able to move it inside Acadiana territory a couple times, but when they got there, they couldn't punch it in. And Theos Figueroa, Acadiana's defensive end, had an incredible game. I think he finished with like 8 tackles and 4 of which were for losses, and he also blocked a kick and recovered a fumble or forced a couple fumbles. So it was just a dominant defensive performance by Acadiana, and then their running game obviously got going late in the game. Dylan Monette ended up finishing with well over 150 total yards of the game, because he also caught a touchdown pass, as well as scoring 2 rushing touchdowns. So a great win for Acadiana. I wrote today that they got through their non-district schedule unscathed. They saw some tests, but they got through it undefeated, and now they're moving on to district where they're clearly the favorite in 3-5A, and I don't really know that any team in that district is close to them. I would assume Barb and Sam Houston are going to give them some tough tests, but aside from that, I don't think Acadiana is going to meet anybody on their level in that district.
You know, a few things, James, I might say in response. One, that LCA offense, it's not where it was with Zach Clement, and I understand that they've played, Westgate so far, they've played Acadiana, they've got Evangel coming up, and so those teams, their defenses can expose maybe that lack of identity, but I still think that LCA is going to be just fine, don't you, once they get into their district, especially once they get into, I guess, what you would consider playoffs?
Yeah, I think their biggest issue is that, you know, like you mentioned, they don't have a Zach Claymont on their roster anymore. I mean, when you have a quarterback of his ability, especially at the 1A or 2A level, you're going to win a lot of games. It's just a lot of 1A and 2A size schools don't have quarterbacks that good. And LCA is having to adjust to that. And, you know, as Aaron Rodgers is an incredible athlete, and he can certainly do it with his legs, and he has a good arm. I just think that at times, you know, it's clear he's not a natural quarterback. He's a receiver. I mean, that's what he's going to play on the college level. So I think at times he looked a little rushed there. And it seemed like LCA didn't really try to run the ball against Acadiana. Logan Gabriel didn't get many carries in the game, and I don't know if that was just a decision by the LCA coaching staff to say, hey, we're not going to have a lot of success running it, so we're going to have to throw it. And it just didn't, you know, it didn't go, you know, great for them, to be honest. And Ryan Roberts saw some snaps, and I thought he did okay. But, you know, again, those are just inexperienced quarterbacks trying to go out there against an Acadiana defense. And a lot of teams are going to struggle against Acadiana's defense. That's just the reality of it. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think LC is going to be just fine. Their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games, regardless, even against their better competition. That's just how good the defense is. So I wouldn't be worried about LCA, but certainly I think they have, you know, some room for improvement offensively.
Talking prep football with James Buers of the Acadiana Advocate. My only other comment, you mentioned in 3-5A, who's going to challenge Acadiana? Yeah, I don't think there will be many challengers. Although I will say, I did have the Sam Houston Karen Crow shootout on Friday night just north of Lake Charles. I think Sam Houston would score on a lot of people around this area, but defensively, they've got no chance against Acadiana. I do want to move it forward, James. A couple of teams that are thought of, I mean, year in, year out, as just beasts from around this area that are off to troubling starts. Catholic New Iberia, Brent Endest and company are 0-3. Vince Derwin and St. Martinville are 1-2. Do you think that either or both of those programs can turn it around this season?
Well, you know, the biggest thing with Catholic High, they played, you know, three really good football teams. One, I think they would, you know, looking back on it, they probably would have liked to have won that VC game because they were in that game the entire time and VC just kind of outscored them, frankly. And they played Breaux Bridge and really struggled, to score in that game. And then last week, Barb just kind of, probably had more depth than them and just a few more, you know, playmakers over the course of the game. They lost, I think it was like 40-something to 20-something. So for them, I think it's just kind of resetting and getting the district play. And Brent Indes has maintained to me that he feels like his teams get better over the course of the season. And certainly playing the teams of BC and Brobridge and Barb's caliber will benefit them going forward. And I still think they're the favorite in their district. I mean, the only team really close to them is Ascension. You know, Ascension's a pretty good team, but they lost this past week to North Vermilion. So I don't really know what to make of them at this point. But, you know, I would think Catholic High can run the table with their remaining games and will look up in their 7-3 and entering the Division III playoffs as a high seed. You mentioned another team, Ben. Who was the other one? I apologize for missing out.
Not a problem, but St. Martinville up to a 1-2 start.
Oh, yeah. You know, St. Martinville, I guess their defense just isn't exactly what we thought it was. You know, they return 8 starters, and I thought their secondary was going to be particularly strong. But one thing for them right now is their best defensive back, Bailey Mitchell, I think is out right now. So I think that's having an impact. But aside from that, it just seems like the transition of moving on from an all-state running back like Travian Benjamin and their quarterback last year, Markaven Williams, I think kind of, you know, didn't get enough credit for how good he was. I think that's having an effect on them. And, you know, keep in mind, I do think Lafayette High is a much improved team. I mean, to me, they're the story of the Acadian area so far. Them and Southside, which is funny that they're both 5A teams from Lafayette. But yeah, and then, of course, playing Brobridge this past weekend. You know, I think Brobridge is a team with a lot of talent and a lot of playmakers, and they would be a challenge for any team. But, yeah, a little bit of a disappointing start for St. Martinville, but still plenty of time to rebound. You know, they're in that district with Kaplan and Crowley, and both Crowley's kind of gotten off to a tough start, too. I think they're 1-2 right now, and Kaplan lost this past week to Church Point. So St. Martinville will certainly have a chance to win that district. They're definitely one of the top contenders in that 3A district.
We've been doing a lot of looking back and then sizing up where teams are. James, as we finish up, let's look ahead. 2 straight weeks, they're going to be phenomenal games at the home of the STM Cougars. It's Neville this Friday and then Catholic Baton Rouge a week from Friday. Let's stick with STM, Neville, a team that literally shut out defending champs U-High up in North Louisiana a couple weeks ago. I think that was one of the eye-popping results of the season so far. How do you handicap it? I think it's maybe unfair to say all offense versus all defense, but I think there are two very contrasting styles that are going to meet Friday in the Hub City.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what to make of that game because when you see that score from the Neville U-High game, I mean, that definitely stands out. But I think the one thing I've heard about Neville is that they've struggled with turnovers. Like, their offense has given the ball away a good bit. I think there was 7 combined turnovers in that Ruston game to open up the season, especially in the first half. I think Neville struggled with turnovers, so they ended up winning it. And then they beat U-High by shutting them out. So you don't need a ton of offense when you shut out the opponent. And then they I guess they kind of won a shootout against Wichita Parish this past week in 38-35. So kind of a lot of mixed results from Neville, but they've won nonetheless. And they're obviously playing an SDM team that's red hot. And, you know, we all know what they can do on offense, but to me, their defense has really stood out this year. They've intercepted six passes. They've returned two of those interceptions for touchdowns. They've sacked the quarterback eight times. They're holding opponents to 13 points per game. So when you have a defense that could, you know, plus an incredible offense, you're going to win a lot of games. And I would expect STM to win this game, but I think it's going to be a great game. And I think it's an opportunity for STM to say, hey, we're not just one of the best teams in 4A. We're one of the best teams across any classification. Of course, they're going to play Catholic High in a couple weeks, and that will say even more about what kind of team STM is. But still, this is their first opportunity to kind of make a statement across the state, in my opinion.
All right, make one more statement on our program, James. What's coming up with your coverage and the whole team over the Acadian Advocate as we continue to go down the stretch of this high school football season?
Yeah, we'll have my Super 10, my weekly ranking of area teams. Not a lot changing with the rankings this week, but still it'll kind of reset for, you know, as we enter the second half of the season, so to speak. I know we're only in week four, but still it's getting close to the midway point of the season. And then, of course, we'll have a lot of coverage going throughout the week, which is a huge week for the area. There's a ton of great games. You mentioned the STM Neville game, but also Notre Dame and Turling play this week, a rivalry game, two unbeaten teams. Brobridge and Eunice, two unbeaten teams in 4A. Lafayette High and Coma, a huge game. And Southside's going to Barre for their first real road trip. So a big week and a lot of interesting storylines throughout the week, and we'll have it all at theadvocate.com.
It's always good catching up with you. Have a great week. We'll do this again next Monday. James, thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you so much, Ben.
Hey, you love prep sports. We love prep sports, and we want to make sure we connect you with us, everything we know, all the people we talk to that are playing, coaching, and administrating these games. So make sure that you log on, and I mean consistently, to the website, 1037thegame.com. We've got plenty of those player features, some pretty cool stuff up. The Lafayette High Principal, something really cool. Oh, my guy, Kim Broussard, AD over at St. Thomas More. So it's more than just scores, right? More than just promos that we're going to carry the games on our stations, which, of course, we do too. But the content online, you're really going to dig. But to get you ready for what's coming on the air and on the fields this Friday, don't forget about Football Night in Acadiana, 6 until 6:30. Myself, alongside RP3, we're going to bring it to you and get you ready for a busy, as James just told you, important week four for our area teams. It's Football Night in Acadiana, the pregame show, 6 to 6:30 on Acadiana Sports Station. Clint brings you home late Friday night with FNA postgame edition after Danny Jones and company are through from Cougar Field. All right, we're almost through with the show. Here's the good news. We've carved out one final segment, and we're going to talk about a team that might just be number one in all of Major League Baseball, your Houston Astros. Stick with us. We're getting right to the now three-time defending AL West champs when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back at it on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
From preps straight to the pros. One more time, you better believe it's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. And it's always our pleasure to have James Buers. Enjoyed running down the latest from area high school football with James, but I mentioned we're heading to the pros, and lately in pro baseball, at least over the last three seasons, I don't think there's been a more consistently dominant franchise than your Houston Astros. Yes, the Dodgers have won the last two pennants in the National League, and I understand during that same time frame, the Boston Red Sox toppled the Astros in last year's ALCS and got another World Series over in Fenway. However, during that same period of time, well, we see what Boston's doing this year. Not even going to make the playoffs, certainly, it appears. I don't think they have the same ownership, management structure that they did 3 years ago. And with the Dodgers, time will tell. They've got a chance to bring another World Series for a couple of games to the West Coast over on Chavez Ravine, but I don't think they're anywhere near a lock. I'm not telling you the Astros are in this 2019 postseason, but they look like more of a magnet to the World Series than do the Dodgers, at least in my opinion. And so, kind of bringing it full circle, I do think the most dominant franchise of the last 3 years just cemented its third straight AL West championship yesterday afternoon. Justin Verlander on the mound, another solid effort, another W, and maybe another feather in his cap to edge out teammate Gerrit Cole for this 2019 AL Cy Young Award. That might be the most hotly contested of any of the superlative award races, right? Factor in Cy Youngs, MVPs, Managers of the Year, anything that you can imagine, Rookie of the Year, and it's interesting how much of a clean sweep, or how close maybe to a clean sweep that the Astros really could be. It's going to be either one of the two aces, Verlander or Cole. My personal money would go with Verlander, although I must mention right now on this show, yeah, Clint shaking his head. Way back when I said I wasn't sure that Gerrit Cole deserved to be an all-star, got to go Happy Gilmore, Chubbs Peterson here. I was wrong. You were right. You are handsome. I am not very good looking. Yeah, all of those things. Mr. Spin Rate, he's not just striking people out. Gerrit Cole certainly deserved to be an all-star, and he's one of the best two pitchers in the AL. He's one of the best three or four pitchers in the game today. But I'd go Verlander by a nose, maybe, ahead of Cole. They've got another turn apiece to make their case. That's going to be your AL Cy Young, one of the Astros. AL Rookie of the Year, just give the Roy to our boy, Yordan Alvarez. Air Yordan is a freak. If he had played the full season, he might have a little bit more of an impact and a dent into the overall MVP race. And no, that's not hyperbole. I mean, he's been incredible. The guy hardly ever swings and misses. We documented that on Friday's B2BS show. He's an unbelievable player for the future, and certainly even in the present, for A.J. Hinch and the Astros. So I would say Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, signed, sealed, and delivered to H-Town. As for the MVP, a lot of discussion about Alex Bregman. Can he make his way into that race? I would say yes, he can get into the race. No, in my opinion, he can't win the whole thing. I don't know that he's going to be able to overtake Mike Trout. But here's what I am proud to tell you. Typically, when it comes to a discussion about Mike Trout versus fill in the blank, in Trout's earlier days, it was Miggy Cabb, right? Miguel Cabrera playing for the Detroit Tigers. And then we always had the discussion of Triple Crown, offensive bread and butter stats, guys like Cabrera versus probably better all-around players, we can all safely say, like Mike Trout. And this isn't meant to be a dig at Miggy Cabb. He's one of the most prolific offensive players of all time. But he was a liability, middle to late in his career, especially on defense. My point to you now, I think that clearly we all recognize Alex Bregman's one of the top two or three defensive shortstops in all of Major League Baseball. I said shortstops. I meant third base, but I think I might have proved a point there as well. He could be defensively one of the top shortstops in the league, the position he played at LSU. He's been asked to play left field since he's been with the Houston Astros. But defensively, Bregman on the hot corner, he's not only not a liability, he's a plus-plus defender. You throw that in with power that has been sustained, even surpassed this year, and so many of the offensive counting stats, Bregman deserves to be in the race. The only reason it's a discussion, though, of him overtaking somebody like Trout is because the Angels' superstar outfielder is going to miss the final 2 weeks of the regular season with an injury. So Bregman does it on offense and defense. He's playing on a better team than Trout, but I do think the overall wins above replacement, the advanced analytics, and maybe even the eyeball test might support Trout. So I don't know that you're going to get a clean sweep. Rookie of the Year, yep, Astros. Cy Young, you know it, Astros. I didn't even touch on Manager of the Year. I would have to imagine, as good as Tampa's been, you want to give it to some other guys, A.J. Hinch and the Astros, they're going to be hard to beat. And on the field, they continue to be just that. Three straight AL West championships for the Astros. Now an opportunity to go in with home field advantage. The Yankees have to come to you, and a path to a second World Series appearance, and then maybe second World Series championship in 3 years, becomes all that more attainable. All I know, it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun to follow and to listen to. That's why we'll continue to have Astros baseball on 103.7 The Game throughout this very important 2019 postseason. Hashtag take it back. Hey, we're also taking our act back on the road. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be live from Pete's on Johnston. Southside brought 112 people. Last week, 117 for Turnley's Catholic. STM, the Cougars take center stage tomorrow at Pete's. How many will they bring? You'll have to come out and join the number. Be a part of the fun, and we'll all find out together. The St. Thomas More Cougars Prep Power Hours tomorrow from 6 to 7 live at Pete's. Really should be a blast. Today's show, it's been the exact same thing. A blast to have aboard Gus Kattengill talking Saints in the 4 o'clock hour. Ruffin Rodrigue, LSU, the Cajuns in his normal 5:15 slot. It's a power slot where he just cranks it out of the yard, frankly. And then it's straight up 6 o'clock in our last segment, James Buers talking prep football. What a show on a Monday. Enjoy it. LSU, the Cajuns, and Saints all win on the road. 2 of 3 were underdogs, and they all went out and fetched wins. Have your chin held high this week. We'll be right back at it tomorrow from Pete's on Johnston. But in the meantime, to the nation's capital, we send you Redskins hosting the Bears. It's Monday Night Football. For Clint, I'm Ben, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.